Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Dr. Judy Wood about the viability of free energy and her recent tour giving presentations in the UK and Holland. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's a story. Al Gore, pro-carbon tax editorial, a must read. Former Vice President Al Gore is promoting a, quote, must read editorial in the Financial Times on the need for a national carbon tax. The environmental activist posted sections of the editorial entitled A Least Worst Tax on his blog last week, citing, quote, several prominent figures, most notably a former economic advisor to the George W. Bush family and Mitt Romney. The Financial Times editorial board lists various reasons for enacting a carbon tax. Quote, while the adjustment to higher energy costs would have some negative impact, it would be offset by the benefits of cuts in other taxes. Curbing consumption would also improve energy security, making the economy less vulnerable to commodity price shocks. President Barack Obama on Friday last week set out an energy agenda including reduced oil imports, greater use of natural gas, and increased energy efficiency. A carbon tax would meet all of those goals, the editorial board wrote on March 15th. And that article continues. But here's another one by Michael Tennant. Australia's carbon tax contributing to record business failures. Critics of carbon taxes, currently one of the most popular schemes for legally relieving people of their hard-earned money, are often dismissed as crazed doomsayers for suggesting the levies on carbon dioxide emissions, supposedly to save the planet from global warming, will have a dire economic consequence for those subject to them. The doomsayers, however, now have real-world evidence to back up their contentions. Australia, as many listeners may know, instituted a carbon tax in the middle of last year, and already it's contributing to a record number of firms going to the wall with thousands of employees being laid off and companies forced to close factories that have stood for generations, according to News Limited Network. In the last year, 10,000 Australian companies have gone belly up, a number that is more than 12% higher than during the global financial crisis, News Limited writes. Experts say the strong Australian dollar is a major factor in these closures, but the carbon tax isn't helping. Australia has been taxing carbon emissions since July 1 of last year at a rate of $23 per ton, reports the Daily Caller. The system will become a full-blown cap-and-trade scheme in 3 years, and will be integrated with the European cap-and-trade system. The tax has already hiked the cost of electricity to the average family by 10%. For businesses, which use much more energy, it's even worse. There's no doubt the carbon tax is driving higher electricity prices for businesses across the state. Mike Baird, treasurer for the New South Wales Treasury analysis for this financial year, shows that the NSW electricity customers, including small businesses and households, will be hit with a bill worth an estimated $580 million due to higher power prices as a direct result of this disastrous tax. There's a lot of aerosol operations being conducted over Australia and New Zealand. Record flooding in 2010, I believe. We talked with a past guest about that and the radar anomalies that were showing up, suggesting the use of electromagnetic technology to influence weather systems over Australia. And so they had those massive floods. The farmlands that were flooded, those rains subsided, and the land was sold for pennies on the dollar. Then it was a drought. They had a massive heat wave, 115 degrees sustained heat. So here they are suffering with their carbon tax and failed businesses. The article continues, anyone not blinded by climate change hysteria can plainly see that the carbon tax is doing precisely what its most ardent proponents desire, namely shutting down business. That article is titled, Australia's Carbon Tax Contributing to Record Business Failures. that in context with what Al Gore is proposing right now at this time during sequester, austerity. And regarding last week's guest, Suzanne Posel, it come to my attention by a number of listeners that she may not be what she purports to be, which means some people think that she's a disinfo agent. There's a lot of fighting back and forth with alternative radio shows on the internet. And Suzanne Posel mentioned that it's a $1 billion industry. I had no idea it was a $1 billion industry. But what I'm pointing out is a number of red flags have come up when discussing significant issues such as the ongoing aerosol operations, Dr. Judy Wood's material, and Glass-Steagall. I'm not going to go into detail, but red flags have come up that have convinced me that she's not who she says she is. And I'm going through a learning curve on recognizing this. When it comes to supporting something like the Glass-Steagall reinstatement, which is HR 129, it already has 40 co-sponsors and deserves energy to rally new co-sponsors. As citizens of this country, that's our job, to help push that through. Look it up, HR 129, and call your congressperson and find out more about this and get them on board. That wasn't the response that Suzanne gave. Didn't really bother me at the time, but with the help of listeners, which is very valuable to me, that was pointed out. I'll leave it for the listener to maybe establish their opinion on that. To talk more about critical thinking as applied to the events that occurred on September 11, 2001, and how to recognize phenomena related to directed energy, such as the combination of electricity, gravity, and magnetism. She has pointed out that man has in his hands the ability to disrupt the molecular bonds of matter, and if you can control those molecular bonds, imagine what you can do on a large scale, such as destroy a planet. We'll also talk about the process of public perception management when the stakes are high, and how the public is being poisoned against seeing free energy technology. Dr. Judy Wood spent a number of weeks touring through the UK and in Holland to give presentations about her book, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11, and an event in Holland called the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference. Dr. Wood is a former professor of mechanical engineering. She has extensive knowledge of the educational system and learning processes. She's self-taught and practices the method of defining the problem first before solving it. And in the context of her amazing arc of research in the book, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11, it is important to determine what happened before going to the next step of how it happened. These steps are done before moving to the next one of determining who did it. Dr. Judy Wood, welcome back to Another News.
Well, thanks.
I wanted you to tell listeners about your tour in the UK and your presentation at the energy conference in Holland, the Breakthrough Energy Movement.
Well, it started out with the energy conference in Holland, and it was just wonderful that I was invited there because I'm usually so marginalized. And people are in this alternative community have been taught, even they've never looked at my stuff, but they've been taught ahead of time that, oh, don't listen to her, she's an idiot, she's crazy, she talks about space beings, ray beings from outer space, Martians, whatever. And that's what people are introduced to me, how I'm introduced to them, through something totally unrelated to me. So here we have that a lot of people who've heard about me only through that route, who were there, and they I think a lot of them were resistant to my being there. But thankfully, Jeroen had invited me. And a lot of these folks had nothing else to do, so okay, let's go watch. And they were turned around 180 degrees.
Oh, really?
It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be because they saw I just produced evidence. Well, I, you know, show evidence, and evidence that is very powerful evidence. And I couldn't get to see many of the other presentations because whenever I was on the way someplace, I'd be intercepted and somebody wanted to ask me something. So it was a great conference.
And what was the feedback from your presentation? And we're talking about the Holland conference.
You know, folks had no idea, and it was very undeniable once they saw the evidence. But it's, you know, people usually kept from looking at that. But what many, you know, came out and thanked me for is this phrase I've been using: know what you know that you know, and know that everything else you don't know. And don't fill in that gap with, you know, speculation of hearsay, of opinions, of whatever. It's okay to speculate, but do that separately over in another box somewhere. Because if you start mixing it in, you don't know what you have. You don't know what somebody just made you think you knew, or, you know, to just know what you know that you know.
Is this in terms of collecting evidence?
Anything in life. It applies well to this, but anything in life, like, especially if someone wants to suppress a particular technology, what better way to do it than to somehow cause people to conclude that something doesn't work without their actually witnessing it? So know what you know that you know. If you don't know it, absolutely, just because somebody else claims to know it, don't just jump on that bandwagon. And, you know, be cautious about that and be careful to know what you know that you know. If someone says, oh, so-and-so is an idiot because they talk about rabies from outer space, well, where's the evidence on that? And because otherwise, you know, rumors get repeated, repeated, and repeated.
Dr. Wood, to clarify the ray beams from outer space issue, that's connected to a lot of detractors and trolls to disqualify your work, especially in Where Did the Towers Go? And
right.
Where did it come from?
Where did what come from?
The criticism of ray beams.
Oh, I wouldn't call it criticism. I'd call it fabrication. Because I don't talk about ray beams from outer space. I just talk about the evidence. And there's evidence that shows that some type of energy was directed to be used as a weapon. It doesn't have to be used as a weapon, but in this case it was. And so energy was, you can say, manipulated geographically, and it was instructed to do something differently than it normally does. It's not a wrecking ball. It's not kinetic energy. It's not thermal energy. The buildings weren't cooked. So it's some sort of energy that was directed. And when I say direct energy, then, you know, the opposition converts that into radiance from outer space,
mm-hmm.
which is not the case. Like a cell phone, energy is directed. It's not necessarily used as a weapon, but it's directed. You don't have a physical contact with your cell phone. It's energy that travels through, you know, through space somehow, that your cell phone's connected with. It's a wide range of things, but that easily diverts people off onto assuming that's what I've said.
Good. Well, and Jeff is saying that
it's a magic show. You get people to focus over here while you're pulling the trick over there, and so they're busy solving an assumed problem that doesn't necessarily correlate to the real problem. That might seem a bit abstract there.
I understand the analogy. Going back to your experience in Holland, that went really well, and
really well because people got to hear from me for the first time.
For the first time,
and they learned that, wait a minute, she's just talking about evidence, and this makes sense.
After hearing the fabrication and lies used to detract you.
The detractors' stories of stories about stories of whatever, and then, you know, that's what's turned off so many people. But these people who were exposed to this went, oh my gosh, this is plain as day. So several of them came up to me and thanked me for that phrase, know what you know that you know, and know that everything else you don't know.
Don't assume. Afterward, you went to the UK and did another tour on your work and discussing the viability of free energy. What happened there in the UK, and Who helped you with that tour?
Well, Andrew Johnson set up. Once I was, it was nailed down that I was going to the Holland Breakthrough Energy Conference. Andrew put out a word that I was going to be in the neighborhood and if anyone was interested. And so various people contacted them and set up venues. And I went from place to place, got a wide range of places all around the UK. I went from Penzance, which is down at the bottom left-hand corner, way out there at the tip, all the way up to Aberdeen. As far east, Gravesend, Brighton, over to that point, and Northampton, even over in Wales, at Cardiff.
Tell listeners a little bit about Andrew Johnson, if you could.
Andrew Johnson, I guess, somebody who is high integrity, who looks into things for knowing what he knows that he knows, instead of taking somebody else's word for it. Because we grow up being, fed all sorts of things, but what's really going on in the world, what I call him a walking file cabinet, because he knows the bits and pieces of so much stuff. And I know a lot about one particular area. And so if I'm wondering about something else, I can ask him. He always knows something about it. So that's kind of cool. But with regard to, free energy development and who's doing what where, as well as, what's the universe made out of? And it seems like we're all like part of some electrical system. And electricity, magnetism, and gravity are all kind of interrelated somehow. So what is this thing we call planet Earth? What is the solar system? Questions like that. The nature of human beings, too, the psychology. Some really interesting discussions we've had.
He helped you do those tours in the UK?
Yes, he sent me on my way to a set of them, and ones where he had met the people before, he went along with me, and also gave some different talks in different places. And we didn't have very many books, and he did an excellent job with that too. He raffled them off at each place. Kind of fun.
Totally. It sounds like it would have been a great time. Now, Dr. Wood, why do you think you didn't do a tour here in the United States?
Andrew Johnson doesn't live here. But there's also the UK. I got this flavor of more independence in how people think and act. We have sort of distant relatives, long, term friends, family friends of, after generations, and they visited us when I was in junior high. And this fellow John, went to school with me in junior high when he was visiting from England. He wore his little school uniform. And imagine how American junior highs are. If you wear a school uniform at public school, junior high, man, the ridicule is, immense.
Right.
He put a big grin on his face and shrugged his shoulders. He didn't know what their problem was, but he knew it wasn't his problem. That stuck in my mind. And on this last visit, I could see that same characteristic, is that people are more secure with themselves. They're less, peer pressure doesn't rule. If somebody's different, well, they're different, that's okay.
So in a general sense, you can tell that the peer pressure, the power of that
is much stronger in the U.S.
That's an interesting observation. I wonder why that is. Maybe the marketing is more intense here.
Last year when I was going to the Isle of Wight, I was on a ferry by myself, and it wasn't a whole lot of times I was by myself, and the ferry was getting ready to leave, and the woman was sitting on in the seating in the top of the ferry, and her husband turned around and said something about a seat, and I said, oh, we're supposed to get in our seats, and I quick sat in the seat, and it said, she said, no, my husband said, just save me a seat. I said, well, see, I'm an obedient American. Just try to do what I'm told. I was kind of joking about it. And she said, oh, why are you here? And, tell her what I'm going to do, and out comes the book. And she was just so relieved. She said, oh, I always wondered why there wasn't enough debris there. Like, she had these questions, but just didn't know who to ask.
Ooh,
and just that easy to get to talking with her. And this last trip, Andrew put me on a train to send me down to Cardiff. I was by myself, and, you know, there's a guy there working on his laptop, and I'm sitting in one of these seats with the table. I don't remember how it came about. I think he talked about when the towers collapsed. Collapsed? You can imagine how I am with that,
yeah.
That term. It didn't collapse. And out comes the book. And I flipped to the pages, was talking through it, and over the period of about 2 hours or so, from Birmingham down to Cardiff, went through the book. And he just take it in. Jaw drop, and of course, you know, leave them with a card and whatnot, but they're very receptive. I don't think you can do that, you know, so easily here. People have they know what the truth is, they don't want to be confused by the facts.
One of the main reasons for that trip is to also discuss the viability or practicality of directed free energy technology. And before we go into that, I want to ask you, what does the practical use of directed free energy technology look like, or how would that look like at some point in the future on the Earth?
There's a variety of different things, and it's like wide open as to what we choose to do with it, we humans, that if we understand, you know, the laws of nature and how it can be used. For example, before people realized how to tap into, waterfalls and make hydroelectric power plants to generate electricity, they probably thought it was pretty magical to think that you could run a conductor through a magnetic field and generate electricity. It's like magic, isn't it? If you don't understand that phenomenon. And as children, we learn that if you wrap a wire coil around a nail and plug the wire into a 9-volt battery, voila, that nail becomes magnetic. So understanding, you know, those kinds of laws of physics or physical phenomenon, that it's becomes, you know, very useful. Well, there's other phenomena that we don't know about. We are not taught in school, but doesn't mean it doesn't exist. If we know about those things, maybe they're even more powerful than electricity and magnetism. Because right now we have electrical wiring that, you know, comes to houses, and we're dependent on this power grid. Imagine if you could have a little box in your house that powers everything you need for life. Now, you change the economy big time. So there's, you know, he controls the energy, controls the people. And some people don't want to give up that control. So they wouldn't want people to have those boxes.
In what you know, and all of your experience and work, could something like that exist?
Very easily. And it has. But the thing that I have seen is that people develop these in the secrecy of their basement, and then they end up suicided or, you know, ridiculed out of existence, or their careers are trashed, and, you know, all sorts of rumors that they have, you know, three eyes and seven ears, and so don't listen to them. And information is so easily controlled that way. So if you're just looking at this one person who invented something here, or that one person who invented something there, it can't really take hold. Because if everyone else hasn't witnessed it, how are they going to believe it? That's why I come back to what happened in 9/11. That was a demonstration of free energy technology to the whole planet, if they only would realize it. That you don't have to go visit somebody in the secrecy of their basement to witness it. The whole world saw it. And what I mean by free energy technology, not that some black box gizmo powered a laser beam from space. No, the technology that did what got done on 9/11 can be used for good, and it can be used to produce free energy. Think of it. Man has in his hands the ability to disrupt the molecular bonds of matter. Using that for good is immensely powerful.
One thing you pointed out to me is that this energy isn't kinetic, nor is it thermal. Can you explain that?
If you're going to destroy the World Trade Center with bombs, well, it would have a certain signature behind. Things would blow up, chunks go flying. A wrecking ball, that's kinetic energy also. Something moving, hitting something else. A missile, that's kinetic energy. Bullets, slingshot, hammers, you know, things that hit other things, things that cause things to, you know, send them flying. Thermal energy is, you know, heat. A laser beam from space cooking the buildings, the buildings would be destroyed through thermal destruction. But what happened wasn't kinetic, wasn't thermal. The buildings were not cooked to death. They weren't beaten to death or pounded to death or blown to death. The molecular bonds came apart. And you could see the steel pieces falling through the air, turning into dust as they fall and never hit the ground.
It is remarkable when you have that information and then you watch the footage, you really see it. Now, something else you mentioned in a previous conversation about what directed energy actually means.
In the most general sense, and I use it in the most general sense of, you know, the different categories, it's not thermal energy, it's not, kinetic energy. It's energy that's directed. And directed as in geographically, what was destroyed at 9/11 was only buildings with a WTC prefix. And also directed as in giving it instructions, directing it to do something it doesn't normally do. Instead of the bonds being attracted to each other, repelling each other. And that you can see that by just observing the evidence. The traditional directed energy weapons is, you know, it's a wide umbrella thing. You know, like a laser or a maser that sits in one place and does something someplace else. The destruction is occurring through heat or something, some other effect. But it's so that's a hot directed energy weapon. A laser beam would be, you know, cooking something someplace at a distance. And so, yeah, the ultimate destruction is thermal. Or a microwave transmitter. Hey, look at your microwave oven. That's directed energy. Cooks your food.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also cold directed energy systems. So whatever happens isn't because it got cooked. Something else caused the material to fall apart.
You've also used tornadoes as an example or parallel in your presentation. And I just want to remind listeners, we're talking with Dr. Judy Wood, the author of Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. And we're talking about her experience recently on a tour, giving information out in a presentation about her book and free energy. And some of this material we're talking about now was delivered in the presentation. Now, you mentioned the parallel with tornadoes. Can you go into that a little bit more?
Yes. April 3rd, last year, 2012, there were a bunch of tornadoes in Dallas-Fort Worth area. And it was shown pretty widely that these flying trucks, big tracks or trailer trucks, getting tossed up in the air about, 500 feet off the ground at least. If you look at the length of the truck, you know, quite a few truck lengths up off the ground. And then it was said they're 12,000 pounds empty. And you see these trucks just whee, you know, they kind of twist up, and then it's like they relax and they're just whee, float down. And then climb back up and whee, float down. And you think about that, a truck sitting on the ground, how much wind is it going to take to, you know, like a geyser right underneath to go off to launch it up that high? No, something else is going on here.
I've been set free, and I've been bound to the memories of yesterday's clouds.
Just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Judy Wood. And specifically right now, we're talking about the phenomena of electricity, gravity, and magnetism that come together to create an anti-gravity field around tornadoes, and connecting that to understand some of the anomalies that occurred around the World Trade Center towers on 9/11, directly related to Dr. Judy Wood's book. But to have shows like this on the air, we need your support. And as many listeners know, your support is extremely important right now, especially for the Emergency Transmitter Fund. There are a number of events coming up, and also an online art auction that had started earlier this month, and it continues through April 1st. You can actually bid on artwork from painting to photography to works on paper by going to wbaiauction.org and pledge to support Free Speech Radio and get something as a reminder of your contribution. wbaiauction.org. That is also for the Emergency Transmitter Fund online art auction. And as you've been hearing the promos for, there's a benefit dance party at SOB Sounds of Brazil on March 27th. Starts at 6 and it goes to 10 p.m. $20 donation cover that goes to help contribute to the Emergency Transmitter Fund. A lot of producers, musicians, and people connected with this wonderful station that are stepping up and holding events. There is also an event at Comic Strip Live. Six comedians will be performing. And again, this is all going to benefit the Transmitter Fund. This is on Thursday, March 28th, and that starts at 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. Tickets are $20, $35 for two people. A great deal. This is at 1568 Second Avenue Comic Strip Live. You can get tickets at Give, the number 2, WBAI.org. Go to Give 2, WBAI.org. And check out the other events that are going on to support this wonderful station. If you want to contribute directly right now to WBAI, call 516-620-3602 and pledge your support on the $100 level, the $200 level, the $1,000 level, and support Free Speech Radio, no commercials, great content on this wonderful station. It is, as many know, in transition, moving toward a better place. Let's all hope we can do it, but we can't do it without your help. Please call that number, 516-620-3602. And while we continue the interview with Dr. Judy Wood, please dial 516-620-3602. And again, we're speaking with Dr. Judy Wood. As you hear, it's still extremely important to understand what happened on September 11th, 2001, here in New York, in the context of directed free energy technology. We also advanced the discussion into what are those practical applications? What will it look like?
And this is not in the funnel cloud. This is in just the area around that neighborhood.
That's right.
And the trucks are just flying through the air. So it appears to be something that reverses gravity, turns off gravity or undoes it. And this has been said in a lot of other situations. Soon after my book came out, and I have a part about tornadoes in there, someone contacted me saying that they were in a tornado. They were out in a football field, football practice, and the coach didn't call them in soon enough. And several of them got lifted up into the funnel cloud. And they said they could breathe just fine. There wasn't a lack of oxygen. And the thing that really got to me was that they said proprioception was precise and motion was effortless. Proprioception meaning like if you close your eyes, you can touch your nose. You know where the parts of your body are relative to other parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they're describing is weightlessness. And it's so easy to move and know where things are. And it was an amazing experience. And then they just got set back down on the ground later. They didn't get dropped out of it. And like these trucks in Dallas-Fort Worth area, you notice them piling up from the parking lot there. But those big empty trucks, you know, the trailer parts, they're hollow. They're like a little lightweight tin box. You know, when they drop, you get them mashed and torn up, but they just had like a little bit of twisting in them. So things tend to get set down like the field gradually diminishes. It doesn't just drop it or slam it to the ground. And there's also an incident with that same tornado system where a house was totally destroyed and the people in it all survived. There's a little boy that was found on the near the highway. He was just set down on the grassy area next to the road. Somebody else was in the field someplace else. You know, they're pulled out of the house, but gently set down. I think the baby was, in intensive care. It was, damaged somehow, but survived. It's pretty remarkable that the house was totally destroyed.
This phenomenon occurs in nature.
Exactly.
And as you've pointed out in your book in Stairwell B, is there a connection with the survivors in Stairwell B?
Going back to, I think it was 1966, was it? Or somewhere around then, I was a youngster and our family was driving to Topeka, Kansas one morning. Now, the night before, they had that horrendous tornado that swept through town. I thought it was an apartment building, but I think it was a dormitory. Now, but then I thought it was an apartment building. We just sliced in half, and half the building was just gone. You could look in and see somebody's bedspread, just like my sister's bed's wire, what I really remembered. The bed was made, magazines on the bedspread, books on the dresser, clothes hanging in the closet, looked totally undisturbed. But there was no support under the floor. The building was just sliced in two, right through the room. And amazing, just totally amazing, that without disturbing this other stuff. And I saw the same thing that, reminded me of that same scene with Building 4 at the World Trade Center. It was just sliced. You could look and see what was on somebody's desk. And in the videos from last spring, from April 3rd, they showed where the roof was off of a house, big screen television, undisturbed, sitting there. He had books on the bookcase and a stack of papers that weren't blown around. It wasn't wind that did it. There's something else that goes on.
What is that something else? Why is it important to observe this particular detail in conjunction with what happened on 9/11 and in terms of free energy?
If you can figure out how that comes to be, here you have anti-gravity. You have, affecting the molecular bonds of matter. It's just a very powerful type of physics that's right in front of us. And let's set that aside. Let's talk about somebody developing free energy technology in the secrecy of the basement who, end up suicided. Or if they are now going to go demonstrate it to the public, they come to the demonstration and for some reason it doesn't work that day. It turns out a fuse is blown in the gizmo or something doesn't go right. And then everyone's laughed at and said, well, see, free energy technology really doesn't work, and this guy's just a hoaxer. And that then, gets laughed out of existence for another 20 years, and we go through the same thing again. Pons and Fleischmann, that's the same thing happened to them, that there's some phenomenon going on there that they documented.
With cold fusion.
Yeah, what was termed cold fusion, which is part of the way of controlling public opinion about it, like fusion at room temperature, ha, isn't that silly? Cold fusion, we know about hot fusion, but cold fusion, come on. It was had that sort of flavor to it, rather than realizing there's some sort of nuclear process going on here,
mm-hmm.
where we're getting out more energy than we're putting in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go study it. That's a more logical response that scientists would take, but controlling public opinion about it is very easy to do if people are just following some herd somewhere. And actually how that was suppressed too was at a press conference where they took a vote on it. Science by vote. And so if we come up with these things one by one, somebody's demonstrating something here or there where only a few people can observe it, it can easily be suppressed and shut down, and the general public is then led to believe that it's all just a hoax. But 9/11, everyone around the world saw it. They just don't realize what they saw. They're told to see something else. But if they realize what they saw, it's kind of like a safety net. It makes it undeniable to the entire planet that free energy technology exists. Once that is established, anybody can be developing, you know, these things one by one, not even in the secrecy of the basement, but in the light of day, because it's known that free energy technology exists. There's nothing to cover up anymore. It's all out there. So different people can come up with different things here and there, and the motive for burying it or manipulating the public to think that Joe Energy Wizard over here is a hoax, the motive isn't there anymore, because we already know that something exists. So I see it as sort of like a base on which everything else can grow, you know, freely, without worrying about, you know, shutting somebody down. Because right now, it's just around the corner, and that's where we've been for, you know, 20 years. Free energy is just around the corner, and here's something, oh, it flopped. Well, I guess it really doesn't exist after all.
I was wondering if somebody in the UK, when you were doing those tours, would come up and say, Dr. Wood, I have to talk to you. I think I have something here, and you might be interested in, you know, something like that could have happened. I mean, even if it did, I guess you'd have to be careful about what you, how you talk about it.
Right.
Because the stakes are high.
The way I'm so strongly ridiculed, it's amazing the extent it goes to. Truly the amazing phenomenon. It's easy for me to see because, you know, I'm sitting right over the target. And you have to wonder, where all does that energy come from that to motivate people to work so hard at it? It's because this is probably, you know, I'd say easily the most important thing in existence ever. Not just in our lifetime or in the history of humanity, but to the world, to the planet. I know it sounds, you know, kind of strange. It's not. I'm not patting myself on the back by any means.
Right, I understand.
This kind of control of, you could probably destroy the planet instantly. If you could control the molecular bonds of matter, imagine if you do it on a large scale. Poof. Oops. There goes the planet. There's no undo key. So understanding what it can do, it comes before doing it. We don't want to learn by trial and error. And I have a feeling that is why folks like Ed Leedskalman wouldn't release their secrets. Ed Leedskalman, who built Coral Castle with supposedly it was a third grade or fourth grade education, built this castle out of brain coral in Florida, and even moved it 10 miles and, you know, rebuilt it. Excavated these stones. They're about 15 tons each. They're about the same size as the stones in the Great Pyramid. Kind of makes you wonder. But he would only work at night and when nobody was looking. He had a great sense about him when somebody was around. He'd just stop working. And, of course, the debunker types would say, well, he was just a hoax. Now, if you think about it, are you going to leave the gun cabinet in your house unlocked if not everybody in the house knows what guns can do? I really think it's to do with responsibility of this technology, that you need to earn the right to use it, to first understand what it can do before, like, you have to understand what guns can do before, you know, you hold a gun.
That's not the reason why this energy isn't out. There is a deliberate suppression. And you don't think it's because of that, do you?
I think that's what it is for Ed Leedskalman, why he, didn't share the secrets quite so openly with others. He did put stuff down in his booklet and drop a bunch of hints that if you don't like the way he's written it, here's the empty side of the page to rewrite it, as though it's a code to break. But there really is something to that understanding, to grow up, to have a generation grow up understanding what it can do before unleashing it. That's nothing why it's so important to understand what happened on 9/11. Here's what this technology can do. Now, before you push the start button, don't just start fiddling around experimentally. Realize what it can do before you get into this. But the other aspect is a whole lot of other, you know, motivation, surely, for suppressing it, which is, he who controls the energy controls the people. And so if people control their own energy, some people like to control others, some don't.
You're right. That's not the concern necessarily because of the atomic bomb experiments. They didn't know that wouldn't replicate in infinity, yet they took the chance.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Those who decide to go forward with that test, I understand. I don't know them personally, but I understand, as the story goes, that they knew that the scientists did not know if it would be self-quenching.
So what is your opinion on the technology that was used to put together Coral Castle?
Magnetism, electricity, and gravity are interrelated.
Is this getting to the same natural phenomenon around the tornado?
Exactly. Exactly. If you could control that in a particular environment, you know, in a certain space, XYZ space, you could levitate, you know, 15-ton stones.
It's interesting because it seems like it would take a lot of equipment to do something like that, a lot of devices. It seems that way.
Stuff was there. It was it's a little flywheel with a bunch of magnets on. He even had his own power plant that ran his house from this little gizmo. And the chains that he supposedly used in this tripod that picked up 15-ton stones, the tripod isn't strong enough, and neither are the chains to pick this up. But there's people who did hear, some of his neighbors would hear, a high whistle kind of sound. And I've heard that with other events, too. And so there's some interesting things there. But figuring out how to control it is, I think, an important thing. But first of all, realizing that something exists that you're going to try to replicate, instead of just spending all sorts of energy to poo-poo it. Right now, that's where the energy is spent, trying to debunk the debunkers of the debunkers of the debunkers. People round, don't go anywhere.
Do you think if you were funded by some institution or some place, maybe in Europe, would you be able to devise free energy systems, maybe with the help of, maybe they brought in John Hutchison or somebody else that was willing to share information and collaborate?
Sure, but there's no point in doing that unless the foundation is set out there for it to go somewhere. Because if the public is being, sort of poisoned against seeing it, then it doesn't go anywhere. You can have it in, your factory making all sorts of these products, but meanwhile, someone is out there convincing the public that you're just a total idiot, or you get suicided or something like that. So getting the foundation laid that says, okay, it's obvious that free energy technology exists, I bet you at that point it'd be springing up all over the place.
You are, once again, emphasizing an amazing issue here that a lot of people overlooked, and that is the process of public perception management and how critical that is for human evolution.
Exactly.
How critical is it?
Everything. That's what slows things down. Well, here's a good example. Like what my dad said about my book. He said, yeah, Copernicus had problems with his book, too. That it's my understanding, it took 100 years for that information to be taken seriously. It could be suppressed that long. It isn't that the public isn't capable of understanding it. It's that it is actively suppressed. I'm going to, here I'll get into the speculation realm. From what I know about how things work now, I can assume that back then, Copernicus starts talking with his buddies and shows them stuff that the Earth must be going around the sun, and here's why, and the Earth's round, not flat, and, oh, yeah, you got to put, you're right on. That's undeniable, blah, 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 blah. And then this one tells that one, and that one. There's a group of them, pretty soon, the church or whoever the controlling group there is, says, we got a problem here. This guy's a kook. See? He's a kook. And then that gets spread out. And then pretty soon it gets shut down. Another 100 years to get out from under that again. It's so easily controlled that way.
It's very easily controlled. And the public opinion is absolutely critical for the evolution. And we're so vulnerable as a species on that level. To be manipulated.
Who wants to, where's the motivation to suppress this? Well, those who are making, lots of dollars off of oil, nukes, nuke plants, you know, they don't want to shut down the business. War is a also profitable business. All that goes away. It's clear that wars are, you know, kind of a hoax. It's a type of business. I know that sounds cruel. And I really, you know, feel for the families who have lost people. But what is the purpose of war? And a lot of people have said, if this technology exists, why haven't they used it wherever? Well, that's assuming you know what the motive is. If the motive is to, you know, wrap things up and do whatever, it would be wrapped up. But if the motive is to just have havoc going on in some areas of the world, for whatever reason, then that's what goes on.
So not only does it exist, and those that foment war know it exists and suppress it and continue with kinetic weaponry, hot fusion weaponry, and obviously directed energy weaponry.
Laser beams, whatever. Yeah, electronic warfare is like toasting an aircraft of the other side, you know, the enemy or whatever, toasting the electronics in it. All that goes on, and it just keeps things going in this futile circle and self-feeding on itself. But that all gets shut down if this gets realized. Isn't that powerful?
It is.
Or something in.
What's your schedule look like in terms of getting this information out and continuing to get the information out about your book in the United States?
We need to, let as many people know as possible, the sooner the better, before we don't have that option anymore. And, you know, so many folks say, well, we got this problem or that problem or that problem. Well, this one pulls the rug out from under all the others. If, you know, the power elite, the crew, as I like to call it, whoever they are, this takes away all of their controlling power. It upsets the apple cart in a very big way. And as things, you know, look grimmer and grimmer for this economic system and political system, things are going to be changing where we have even less control, I believe. And so getting back our control and getting this information out there would do that. If anyone who wants to set up a venue, I'll come talk. Now, I might like, you know, my gas money or whatever to kind of somebody help out there with donations, but I don't ask for anything, you know, beyond that. If we could set up, you know, in libraries around the country, give talks one place or another, or even play that video, that DVD. It shows a lot of the evidence there. But, you know, various ways to talk to people. But one other thing that gets, that is a risk here is if other people start presenting this, it ends up being that things get altered this way or that way, and then this person talks to that person, talks to that person. Remember that game we played as children, gossip, where somebody whispers something in the next person's ear, whispers something in the next person's ear. By the time it comes around the circle, it's totally unrelated.
Mm-hmm. It's mangled.
Information is. And that's a difficult issue with this. That's why it's nice to get it, you know, more from the source. And I have studied it for, you know, 12 years or so, as well as the background behind that.
I don't know if you're alluding to a lot of the internet radio shows you've been doing, and it's difficult to even be on these internet radio shows to get the information out because there are so many detractors and people who appear to know what your book is about, and they're talking freely about it like it's their own. So you've been up against the same sort of thing on internet radio in the alternative news world.
Yeah, even when Andrew's presented my stuff, if he's got something wrong here, well, yeah, close enough. You got to be precise. Because those kind of things blow up into something else and are used to suppress it. Because the next person repeats something. And it's one thing I'll say about Jesse Ventura. He never made a mistake when he presented my material. And he didn't go beyond what he knew that he knew. It's very admirable, because that's, I don't know if I've seen that much, if at all, elsewhere.
Jesse Ventura, who did an episode of, I think it was about the Death Ray, and you were in it, and that's on his show, Conspiracy Theory. That was filmed last year, is that correct?
Filmed in 2011, and I think they did a bunch of editing and other things to it, and it's people think that I have control of it. No, neither does, I don't think Jesse Ventura does that much either. It was really lucky that it came out, that much even came out.
So despite all the criticism about Jesse Ventura from other conspiracy alternative news people, your opinion of the former governor of Minnesota?
Very, very high. And I think the criticism began when he began talking about my work.
Well, Dr. Wood, we're coming to the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to tell listeners before we close?
Know what you know that you know, and know that everything else you don't know. And take, you know, consider what different people say, but there's so much that gets hyped, and it's a human condition that applies to all of us, that we are very much controlled by our emotions and by our perceptions. And if somebody wants to manipulate us, that's the avenue, which is why you need to know what you know that you know. I would like to say something about Sandy Hook is a good example of this. You know, okay, let's apply that. What do you know that you know that you know about Sandy Hook?
Not very much, actually.
Yeah, me neither. So, okay, done. Next. If you don't know any more than that, you know, why talk about speculation of hearsay, of opinions, of theories, of speculation, of whatever? You have nothing to work on. You just generate stuff and go around in circles and chase your tail, and you can't solve anything. You first have to establish what happened. If you can't establish that, okay, go move on to something you can establish it on. And I do wonder if it's, you know, doing this tail chasing is kind of a setup for teaching people they can't solve problems. 9/11 is one that we can solve. Here's the evidence. We can sort through it. We can establish what happened. And that becomes vital. So of all the different things going on, and everyone likes to rush something out there as fast as they can, and another one rushes. So we have all this sensory overload of stuff. So pick something that you can understand and understand it thoroughly, and it will serve you well.
Well, Dr. Wood, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I learned so much when you're on the show and in our discussions. Your powers of observation are unparalleled with people I know. And listeners, Dr. Wood put an offer out there to schedule her for presentations, either in and around the New York or this listening area. Take her up on that, and let's see what can happen this year. Dr. Wood, thank you so much for being on Another News.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for being open to seeing what's out there.
You bet. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next week, Monday night, 10 p.m.